We wanted to say a few words about practicing as we transition out of retreat into our everyday life, and then some words about daily life practice. And it's often a question that comes up is how to sustain this practice, you know, in the midst of our you know, life and activities outside of retreat. So one thing to say about just about the transition is that each of us here, whether or not we perceive it, each of us here is quite altered, you know, and slowed down, simplified in ways we notice, in ways we don't notice. So the first thing I always think about is be careful driving home. Sometimes people get on the freeway and it's like, okay. And really, as much as possible, to, kind of honoring and respecting the ways that this has changed us. And so, you know, rather than just rushing back into our life, taking some time, like going slowly as much as possible. And, you know, maybe it's easing back into using technology, or you know, socializing, and really giving oneself space to kind of let things settle and integrate. And along those lines, just as it's difficult for us to evaluate our condition, it's also very hard to actually evaluate or know what has happened here. You know, we've changed in ways that we know and that we might not know. And the reverberations of the retreat unfold over time, over days and weeks and months. So to really honor that process as well and not be so quick to think, I know what happened or I know what didn't happen. To just let it, you know, like this earthworm that's kind of working on us and working through us. I think about retreat practice as like, we have this house and we've taken all of our possessions and arrayed them out on the front lawn. And we've had all this time to kind of look at them and think about them. And then when we return to our life, it's like we can choose what are the habits, what's the furniture of the mind that we need, that we want, that's helpful, that's useful, that we bring back. And maybe there are some things that we don't need anymore and that we can just leave here, that we can just let go of. Old ways of thinking, old ways of talking to ourselves, maybe certain kinds of emotions that we don't need anymore. So just to let that, you know, maybe it's not such a rational process or conscious process, but to let that unfold. In the same way, I sometimes think that what happens on retreat can be precious enough in a way that if we immediately start talking about it and sharing it, and sometimes we can be so enthusiastic, we want to, we know all these people who should meditate, and you know, I'm going to tell them what they should do, and I know how to improve all these people now, and you know, just check it out. Be careful to, and sometimes people will ask, you know, how was your retreat, and. In my experience, most often they're just being polite. You know, just, oh, it was great, you know. And if they want to know more, they'll ask more, and then, you know, and then I share. Or, but just to notice that, yes, in some way I feel that like putting into words for other people something that may be so close and so intimate and sacred, even in a way, it kind of, it loses its power, you know. So, you know, just to see if that, you know, how that is for you. Because it can be a little deflating if you kind of explain some great insights and share them, and, you know, the other person's like, that's all, you know, or something. It's like, and maybe the only other thing I'll say about just this integration process is, if you feel inspired, if you feel like retreat practice is something that's important to you, that you value, in these first few days after retreat, it can be a good time to think about when you want to go on retreat next, and maybe schedule, you know, schedule your next retreat. Because, when we have that inspiration, it's great to, you know, to prioritize it and make room in our life for this if we want to do that. Inez, you want to say more?
One of the things that I suggest is not to make any major life decisions that first week after retreat. You know, don't decide to sell your house and become a monk, or, you know, wait a little bit. So a few of the things that I wanted to mention is that the things have been particularly helpful to me in a daily life practice. I think regularity of sitting is daily sitting is really powerful. You know, sometimes, you know, it seems like, oh, just kind of the same thing every day, you know, and doesn't seem like much is happening during periods of practice. And then other times it gets really juicy. And so it's sometimes, you know, and you go on retreat and it's so much more intense. So it's sometimes people don't really value the steadiness year after year, day after day, of the gradual kind of chipping away of our conditioning that happens through that. And the growth that happens, it's just very gradual. You know, this is a path of gradual awakening. And so I really, if you don't have a daily sitting practice, I really recommend that you do something, create a conditions that really support that for you. And one of the conditions that I think is really helpful, besides, you know, sitting in a group, if you have a sangha, that's fantastic, but is to have a meditation buddy. I had a couple of students who lived in different states, and they would just call each other every morning at a certain time, and they'd say, okay, I'm going to go sit now. Okay. And that was it. But it was enough to really get them both developing this really strong daily practice. In terms of daily life, you know, one of the most really significant things for me was learning to not underestimate one moment of mindfulness. And, you know, the Buddha said, you know, with dripping drops of water, even a water jug is filled. You know, so it's just a moment of mindfulness here in the morning, one in the mid-morning, one in the afternoon. Those moments, you know, over time we develop mindfulness that starts becoming more seamless. And the little trick that I used, you know, is to help me do that better I call a bro, B-R-O, like a brother who's always with you. And it stands for breathe, relax, open. So right now, just take one breath and then just relax. And then open an open attitude to what's next, even if it's taxes. it's a good time to do it then, right? You know, so it's just that one moment, you know, you can connect with your body, you can relax the body, and that's enough. You know, just every once in a while doing that throughout your day. You know, after another retreat, you know, I came home, you know, and I found, I came home and I got really sucked in by my email. I had hundreds of emails sitting there, and I just sat there hour after hour, you know, doing emails. And boy, it was really darkened my mind, you know. And I realized how important it is to really limit that. And so I made a rule for myself that, you know, when I go back to email, I do no more than 15 minutes. And that's it, you know, and you know, even less at times. You know, sometimes I just say, okay, I'll do 3 emails, that's it. And just very slowly, gently go back to it. But because when that happened, you know, I started thinking about, so how do I really bring this practice into my life? And so I decided, I made a commitment that every time I get up from sitting, I mindfully walk to whatever I do next. It doesn't have to be slow, just any speed. So if I just go to the bathroom, you know, which might be 15 feet, you know, that's mindful walking. I disengage, I disentangle from whatever it is I'm thinking about, which is hard to want to do that. You know, that's the, that's that attachment to my thinking, you know, but I just go right to the body and just walk to the bathroom, walk back, mindful walking, get a glass of water, walk to the car from the house, walk to the store, you know. So all these, we have so much time in a day that we do these little pieces of walking. And so, you know, I really recommend that practice. It was just, I felt like it was very transformative in my life. You know, made my home life feel a lot more retreat-like. And then one other thing about emails. I don't know how many of you have to spend a lot of time with these kind of things. I decided to smile with each email, to take a moment and connect with the person I'm sending to, whether it's somebody I don't even know, you know, just there's another human being at the other side of this, you know, who's a suffering, loving human being, just like me, you know. And so in that moment, just writing it with a sense of open-heartedness, you know, and that really changed my presence, you know, when I'm working, you know, when I'm doing those kind of things. So Max?
Yeah. Just along those lines in daily life practice, this idea of a mindfulness bell, you know, a bell is something, you know, sometimes they use in a monastery kitchen, and kind of when you ring the bell, everyone kind of just remembers to be mindful. Sometimes everybody stops. But I love what Inez said about, you know, just any time we have to walk as a mindfulness bell. And I also think about there can be some other, you know, you can find your own cues in your life. Like I remember maybe it was Gil or someone talked about every time you go through a doorway, you know, can kind of be a mindfulness bell. Yeah, okay, you know, going into a new space now. And how many times do we do that and never notice and never think about this is a new space and I can kind of open up and be aware. One of the practices that I've worked on is every time I spend money, you know, letting that be a mindfulness bell. You know, and it's very interesting. It's very interesting to see, you know, whether it's something small or something big or whatever, but just take a moment and check in. And it's like, you know, it can become from being something that may feel very ordinary and transactional. I've been surprised that, you know, paying the utility bills and just having all this gratitude. It's like, you know, we have water, electricity, these things, and you know, being at the grocery store and just really connecting with the person who, you know, is the checkout person, and I'm so nice. And so these mindfulness bells. And the other thing that you might notice is there this impulse to fill up the in-between times with, you know, entertainment, distraction? I mean, there's so much now. It's like podcasts, music, NPR, I'm just talking about myself, audible. Dharma talks, I mean, it's like, you know, there is an infinite selection of things that we could fill our minds with. But when you think about it, these are other people's thoughts. You know, these are other people's ideas. These are other people's, you know, and they may have some good agenda, bad agenda, you know, it might be interesting and educational or you know, or whatever. But it's very interesting to see what it's like to consciously allow there to be spaces of silence, allow, you know, our own awareness, our own being to fill these spaces without needing to kind of fill them up all the time. And have something in our ears that's, you know, speaking to us. And then just one other thing to say about daily sitting. I appreciate how challenging that is, you know, and it's so much easier to sit with a community in a sangha and, you know, someone's watching you sit. I mean, that's the best, right? You're not going to move. one of the tricks that I found helpful is especially when I feel that I don't have time to meditate, you know, and sit down and meditate on the cushion, I just get in the position of meditation. You know, I just say, I'm going to just sit down for like, you know, I do have 1 second that I can sit down and, you know, and just really come into the posture. And almost always it feels so good to be sitting. And then it's, you know, because I sit for a little while or something, but just every day to kind of touch into that, there's something embodied, physical, some muscle memory that comes with just touching into that meditation posture. And often, I think for many of us, the hardest thing is getting over the inertia. Like, the hardest thing is to get yourself to sit down. Once you're sitting, you know, probably going to sit a little while. And then, if possible, to have a regular time. I mean, it doesn't work for everybody, but if you have a time that you intend to meditate, and you can, you know, say, I'm going to commit for the next week, I'm going to sit for 20 minutes every morning at 7 or 8. And then check in at the end of the week and see, how did that go? Does that work? Or maybe, you know, you have to tweak it or adjust it. But the benefit of sitting the same time every day is, our practice starts to become independent of our preferences. You know, if I only meditate when I feel like meditating, you know, that's okay, because, you know, it's better than never meditating. But in a way, it's like our practice depends on how we feel and our whims. And the whole thrust of practice is becoming independent of our preferences in some way. So if there's some way, even if it's 5 minutes, maybe the intention is to sit for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. But just to do it, whether I feel like it or not, is already moving us towards freedom, you know. And it can be something that is as ordinary as brushing our teeth. You know, I don't have to like debate with myself whether that's a good idea to do every day. You know, it's like, what am I going to get out of this right now? Or am I going to like this? Or, you know, no, you just can do it, right? So I think... Anyway, those are just some things that have helped me in daily life.